This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Feminism in your ears. It's another broad podcast on Joy 94.9. Keep listening. Hashtag feminism, hashtag podcast, hashtag broad on Joy 94.9.
I'm gonna marry the night. I won't give up on my life. I'm a warrior queen, live passionately tonight.
And you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Take a ride with a brother. Follow me down the steps of my heart. Follow me, let us guide one another. We'll never be apart, and until we hit the peak, we could be each other's keepers. In the ports and the blocks and the beaches, see the flocks of the lost and the speechless. See the minarets built from the need to be loved. I will show you all my secrets. There are marksmen at markets, bodies in a casket, sinning in a soul. There are pastures, bet that hidden in the folds, linen made of gold. There is shimmering cold, there is darkness. Been penning my name in a wet cement. Been selling my name to the wretched men. Been telling enemies and my best of friends. I've been trying to figure out what I represent. Me. I was chained to the bottle, took a joyride and I pushed full throttle. Let me welcome you to my world. The caps, the cabs, the poetry and fly girls. There is something I should mention. The poems in my heart felt something like a sentence. Caged in, bloodstained bars of detention. But far beneath my pain was something like redemption. I saw a lake full of ink, carried off flying on a sphinx. Where a cumulus storm cloud as I'm in co-chain lightning in my QBN links. Dined out of satellite dishes. Every lyric was a product of a vision and a trance. I was living with an ancestor's wish. Dance with the spirit till the very last kiss. Last minute, my time to kill it. Turn on a pivot and I shoot like Lilith. When the shot clock's down to one, raise up and I shoot the sun.
Oh, and this is Broad. And Broad, of course, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that we broadcast from, the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to all the Kulin elders, women from the past, present, and those women who will be our future elders. We'd also like to acknowledge with respect the traditional owners of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands we broadcast to, and to pay respect to all elders and women elders from all clans and nations past, present and future. So welcome to Broad, September 5, 2016. That was Omar Musa with Freedom, featuring Mataya, a wonderful, I believe, a New South Wales, Sydney artist. And certainly we support any kind of diversity here on Abroad. And sometimes that means playing menfolk music. Menfolk music. Well, it's not folk music. It's hip hop, really. But he was someone that I've heard about and around the block, so to speak. But it was actually someone I spoke to earlier this week, Molly Crabapple, from the US, the artist, protester, journalist, feminist, activist from Occupy and more, who put me on to him. So thank you, Molly, wherever you are. I think she's in Sydney for the for another speaking engagement.
So busy.
I know. And look who's here. Well, yes. Listen who's here.
I'm back. Good evening,
Jackie.
Everybody.
Yeah, cool. So tonight we've got quite a busy show, actually really full to the brim, one could say. We've got Girl Asleep director Rosemary Myers chatting to her, an interview with Eliza Avitri Handayani, a feminist novelist from Indonesia, and as we mentioned earlier, Molly Crabapple from the US, who was over here, both of them over here for the Melbourne Writers Festival. That's been very popular, and there's a bit of crossover with the Feminist Writers Festival too. We'll also talk about a little bit of a review of La Belle Saison and what happens when two French feminists fall in love in the tumultuous year of 1971 in France, La France. But I think we'll play the Rose Myers, the Rose Myers interview very shortly. But before we do that, I think Jackie's got some broad news. Well, it's not really the full broad news, but it's a little bit of broad news.
We're just keeping it to one article tonight.
One's enough.
The show's so full.
Yeah.
It's more of a rant than an article almost. Mm-hmm. So Karl Stefanovic a little while ago made some very, very... Oh, content warning before we get into it. There will be discussion of transphobia coming up. Mm-hmm. So Karl Stefanovic made some very, very transphobic comments quite a while ago. More recently apologised for it, called himself a tool live on air, did the basic minimum, bare minimum decent thing, and has now been nominated for an LGBT ally award.
Oh.
For apologising.
Oh, God. And that was the most, in my opinion, the most pathetic, long drawn out, unauthentic, very cynical apology. And people fell for it. People can't tell the difference between a fabricated apology and a genuine heartfelt apology. And I'm sorry, but it wasn't sorry.
Whether he was genuine or not, an apology for prejudiced language is the bare basic
too
minimum,
late.
And
damage
not deserving
was done.
An award.
The damage is done. They open their mouths. The damage is done.
It
hurts people the moment they do it. Mm-hmm. Any apology is not good enough. And nobody got fired. Nobody was suspended. He still works. He's still got a job, right? Mm.
It's
outrageous,
effort.
In my opinion.
And
anyway,
yeah, that's what's news at the moment.
Yes, well, that's on the Facebook page. So if you want to find out a lot of those sort of things, head to our Broad Facebook page. And yes, lots coming up. I think we might get into the Rose Myers, actually.
Sounds good.
Shortly. Yes, because she's a fantastic woman. This is her debut film, Girl Asleep, and it's just, it's just taking lots of awards. But I'll let her speak about that here in this interview we did earlier in the week, last week now. It goes so fast. I've been to this national forum today on the economic empowerment of women and girls run by the United Nations Association of Australia. And boy, a lot to think about there. I don't have time to talk about it, but
it was heavy.
It was pretty amazing. And thanks to the organisers and Sophie Arnold for allowing me to go along there. It was a heap of cool people. But time for some film for feminists. This is Rosemary Myers and Girl Asleep. You're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Broad Incorporated presents Films for Feminists. Is this a love of cinema gone mad? Is this the impossible dream of finding films that represent women and girls in a way most intelligent, most equal, most inclusive and intersectional? Is this feminism on film? With Sonja Hammer, who stars as a woman who lives for the impossible dream of a world of cinema where women are paid equally to men. Is this just fantasy? A film fantasy? No, it's real. Uncovering old and new films for women and girls about women and girls. Listen to us Monday nights on Broad. Films for Feminists on Joy 94.9.
This is Sonja for Broad on Joy 94.9 and have the delight and the honour to speak to Rosemary Myers, of course, for something called Girl Asleep. Girl Asleep is really doing extremely well as an Aussie film, as it is, of course, and it's excellent. So welcome to Broad.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so as you were saying off air, Cine Oz, you've won an award for that for the film. Can you tell us briefly about what happened there?
It was an amazing weekend. We had the film nominated in the final four, and then we all went to Busselton where the festival's held, and they really took amazing care of us. We had we were kind of wined and dined and hung out with the other filmmakers, but it was after we'd been there for a couple of nights, they had the big award ceremony and announced that we'd won the prize. It's the biggest cash prize in Australian cinema, and it's just, I mean, we were very honoured to be nominated, obviously, but to go to extra steps was just absolutely incredible, and I was literally speechless when we were on the stage accepting the award. It was amazing.
Yeah, that is quite something. And this is a film that has been called by people like Variety magazine as an exuberant example of imaginative filmmaking, a strange, savvy, big-hearted teen adventure. The Hollywood Reporter has called it stylish, formerly exuberant. Actually, the word exuberant comes up a lot in quite a few of the reviews. A great debut of theatre director Rosemary Myers, a funny and imaginative portrait of growing pains. Can you explain, obviously without giving away too much, what the film is, just briefly what the film is about?
Well, yeah, the film was created by myself and the writer Matthew Widdett and our designer Jonathan Oxley. The three of us work together in theatre all the time. We're very interested in coming of age stories. So this is a coming of age story that's about the story of Greta Driscoll. She's a very shy girl, plays it under the radar, and set in the 1970s. And her parents decide to host her a party to bring her out of her shell, and that kind of sends her into this kind of surreal world. But it was based on a play that we made, and you know, as a group of theatre makers, we're very influenced by cinema, obviously by artists like Wes Anderson and Michelle Gondry. And so, you know, we were so excited to actually get the opportunity to make a film. It was a great thrill for us. And then, yeah, obviously, of course, with this teen rites of passage is just something that's very dear to all of us. And it's a really exciting time to situate stories, because it's a time that, you know, so concerned with identity. Who are you separate from your parents? The stakes of everything seem really high. Your sexuality is kind of emerging, all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's kind of the story behind it.
Of course, at this year's MIF, Melbourne International Film Festival, it was awarded the Age Critics Prize for Best Australian Feature Film. What does that mean to you, and what does it mean for the film itself?
I mean, the whole journey with the film's been amazing. We premiered at the Adelaide Film Festival. The film was shot in Adelaide, and we won the audience prize there, and then we were picked up for Berlin, so we all travelled over there with the film, and we were the opening night film for the 14+, and then we got picked up by an amazing sales agent in Europe, so it's been sort of sold all around the world, and we won the big prize in Seattle at the film festival there. So, you know, when we made the film, we were just making something that we wanted to watch and something that excited us, and we were all thrilled to be working in that medium. And then, there's nothing more thrilling than just seeing your work and your ideas that you've been working on with your team with love and passion have traction with an audience. So recognition like the Critics Award, I mean, it absolutely, you know, means so much to us.
Yeah, it would do. I mean, it's a great boost, certainly.
And also the other thing that's really interesting is, like, you know, Australian cinema is actually very tough, even to kind of get it on, especially an independent film like ours, to get it on in the cinema is really quite
here in
hard.
Australia is harder, do you think? Or
this is the first film I've made, so my experience is we've been very lucky around the world. We're about to release the film in America as well, which is fantastic. But we didn't have a lot of cinemas coming on board at first, and now with things like the Critics Award the Cinefest Oz Award, we've suddenly got more and more cinemas saying, okay, we're going to screen the film. It, you know, it looks fantastic. So it just raises the profile of the film and then hopefully gives it exposure to a bigger audience. So it really does mean a lot. Puts the film on everyone's radar a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yes. Yeah.
You know, his script, and to see his script embodied by people of the actual right age.
Yeah.
So that was one of the most exciting things, yeah.
That would be exciting. That would be a great, interesting process.
So people say, what were the challenges? I think it was intense, but it was exhilarating at the same time. If you've worked in theatre for a long time and then you get to do something, to tell a story in a whole new way, that just, you know, all of us were really, and we all love film. Mm. So it was like a bit like a dream come true for all of us to get to make the film.
Also thinking about, because Broad is a show for women and girls, you know, we claim ourselves to be a feminist show, the only one on Joy. I always ask my guests this question.
Yeah.
Do you identify as a feminist, and do you think feminist ideas come through on the film, and is that important?
Do I personally identify as a feminist? I would say like 100%. But do feminist ideas come through in the film? I totally think so. I mean, this is a film that's all about a young woman set in the 1970s. It's about her. And, you know, the 1970s is such an interesting time for women, and yes. It's kind of encapsulated in Greta's coming of age because her, you know, her mother is more of a in the tradition of a homemaker. Her sister is kind of into all this exotic music, and kind of the world was really opening up for women at that time in Australia. So that what, you know, the thing she, but one thing I love about, you know, the journey of Greta Driscoll, I mean, the film takes this surreal kind of journey, and it delves very much into her psyche. And she meets this character called the Holdra, which is this wild warrior woman who lives in the forest and really, you know, teaches her that she has to reach kind of deep inside herself. And then it's all very entertaining and wild and fun. But I think the message is a really, really strong feminist message. And, you know, I mean, I see feminism and humanism, it's all kind of, you know, wrapped up in the same way to me. And it says to a young, I think it's, you know, for Greta Driscoll, she's saying, you know, her parents dress her up like a doll in a party dress. But, you know, the end message really is about you can write your own story in this world. There's plenty of models for how you might want to do your life, but you can actually be empowered and do your life the way you want to do it. And I think that's the strongest message that we can... That message, I think, is a very uplifting message for people, you know, particularly for young women, you know, and there's obviously so many kind of, you know, prescribed kind of, you know, ways that women should behave out there in the media. And I think that's one of the nice things about the 1970s, you know, people, it was a bit more of a naive time. There was, in many ways, too. So all the kind of, there's a lot of full-on stuff out there on the internet and things like that for young people nowadays to have to kind of navigate. And, you know, I suppose, it's just good to kind of, you know, put some, because she goes from a passive protagonist to being a very active protagonist, and I just think that's a great message. I'm Rose Mize. I'm listening to Broad on Joy 94.4 FM.
9.9. 94.9.
Okay,
perfect.
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Hi, I'm Rose Mize. I'm the director of Girl Asleep. You're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Lovely. That's perfect.
We like you, new girl. He's not invited.
So did you want to hang out?
Holy crapples, is that you? You're so cute.
You should stay for tea, Elliot. I'm making chinos.
Greta's turning 15 soon.
You should have, like, an awesome party or something.
I'll get you a new dress and we'll get your hair and makeup done. We can all do it.
Ta-da!
No!
I want to be more than just friends.
So why are you here then? You have no idea, do you?
Take a long ride. Take a long ride. Take a long ride.
Crazy party, huh?
This is Broad on Joy 94.9. Thanks again to Rosemary Myers and to Miranda Brown for arranging that fabulous interview about Girl Asleep, which is out now. It started September 1st. It's at selected cinemas around the country and worth seeing and supporting Aussie-made and South Australian-made talent creativeness film. Excellent. I know Jackie wants to see it.
I do. The trailer looks so cool. It's got this very cool, like, Napoleon Dynamite meets Where the Wild Things Are aesthetic.
Very much, yeah.
Love it.
With the wonderful Sophie Cobham-Hervey playing Huldra. You'll have to find out what that means or what that is or what she is when you go to see the film if you get a chance. Good one. We'll have the full podcast very soon of that entire interview. In fact, all of them. Next up is Eliza Vitra Handayani, a wonderful feminist Indonesian writer, novelist actually, and talking about what it's like to be censored, to be a feminist, to have authorities looking over your shoulder and in some cases not allowing you to even speak at your own public engagement to promote your own book because of the content within that book or books. So let's find out more about that. She was at the Melbourne Writers Festival. And again, we'll have a full podcast for that. Any messages, please send them through. It's easy to do, 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. You're listening to Broad on Joy.
Don't let anyone limit your dreams just because you're a girl or you're different.
Rash, outraged, organized, assertive, activist, day,
Broad,
on Joy 94.9.
This is Sonia here for Broad on Joy 94.9. And Melbourne Writers Festival is still going strong. We've had some great people that we've chatted to, and we're going to talk to some more amazing people. Well, one person in particular, Eliza is here, and she's going to have to help me. Eliza Avitri Handayani.
Yes, good. Very good.
Wow. I'm amazed at myself. thank you so much, and welcome to Broad.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
So, Eliza, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how it all began for you? And, I mean, of course, the experience of winning a national writing, I guess, was it an award at such a young age, at 16, in Indonesia?
Mm.
Wow. It hasn't stopped for you.
Oh, well, I've just always been writing. I've been writing ever since I was a child, really. It's just something that I'm drawn to. So I've just been writing stories in school, in class, just whenever, you know, you're bored with the lesson. And so I
doesn't say much for the education.
No. Oh, there's so much to say about that. But that's a different story.
Yeah, that's another book. That's another book.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's also a lot of challenges because, you know, growing up as a girl, for me, I'm always being told that, you know, this is what you got to be if you're a girl. You have to be nice. You can't play outside. You can't climb trees. Don't play with the boys. Keep your head down. Things like that. And I can't do that. I was like, why? I'm always, you know, why should I do this? Why can't I climb trees? I love climbing trees. I love walking outside and jumping from roof to roof and things like that. And, you know, I mean, if my parents had said that, you know, because we care about you, we don't want you to get hurt, I would have listened more. But what they told me was just, you know, you can't do it because you're a girl. And I'm like, why? I was born as a girl and I happen to love being a girl. But I don't see that should limit what I can or cannot do. So, you know, writing become that kind of escape for me to just imagine myself in this all these wonderful adventures that children love to go, you know, children love to have. And I would just write down my imaginations. But for a long time, I never showed them to anyone because I thought, you know, that's secret. That's no one's going to like it. No one's going to support that kind of way of imagination or thinking. So I just kept them to myself for a really long time until I saw that that announcement for the writing contest when I was 16. Mm. And I thought, no, what the hell? Let's just try send them something. So I sent them something, and then I won first prize. It really came as a shock for me. I didn't expect it.
What was it that you wrote? Can you tell us some?
Oh, no, it was so long ago. It was this kind of sci-fi adventure story. So it was a boy and a girl, and there's this secret mystery facility outside of their village, and they're curious and they sneaked in, and it was something with like alien experiment or something.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah. Sounds like the next Netflix show. Excellent. Imagination. So I guess for you, imagination was a place you could do the things internally that you couldn't do, obviously, as a girl.
Right.
That's hard to be told, you can't do this and this and this because of your gender.
Yeah, and your friends, like the boys, they could do everything you wanted to do, and it just didn't seem fair to me.
And so that was it.
Yeah, on top of that, you know, when I was growing up, Indonesia was under this authoritarian regime, so, you know, everybody knew about the lies the government told, but then we also have to like live with it. We have to like publicly acknowledge it. We can't talk about it publicly because, okay, like we all know, like it's either conform or get into trouble. It also felt very limiting in terms of like possibilities of what you can be, I felt, when you're growing up. So a lot of the things that I wanted to do, I thought I couldn't because it's just not possible. Everybody had to be uniform. You have to, like, there's a lot of limitations in terms of what you can publish as well, what you can write about. So
is that still the case? Very, you know?
Luckily, no. Mm. So I think when I was in high school, there was this huge, massive student protest. So that was in 98. Mm-hmm. The student protest finally brought down the president at the time, the dictator at the time, and then it was the start of democratization. So after that, we have free elections, we have freer press, much freer publishing industry. So it must have been pretty
difficult before that.
Yes.
Like, you know, very oppressive.
Right. And that became the subject of my novel, the one that is published last year and is being promoted now at the festival. So it's called From Now On, Everything Will Be Different. And it follows this young man and young woman who came of age during that student protest movement. And like me, they grew up feeling repressed and they were told you have to hide who you are, be like everybody else. And then suddenly this revolution happened and they felt there's so much new possibilities. There's so many new freedoms. And suddenly they felt, oh, maybe now it's possible for us to stop living in hiding, stop pretending, and just come out and try to live honestly as who we want to be. So the story is about them, you know, testing their new freedoms, but also figuring out what it is they want to do with their new freedom. And you know, when you have all these new options, you have to decide where do you want to go. And to answer that question, you have to figure out who are you really. So it's a search for freedom and identity.
However, on saying that, I'm just skipping the questions
here.
Okay. However, on saying that, You've had an experience where parts of what you talk about in the goes on in the book was censored, I believe, back in Indonesia. What was the issue there for them?
My novel, From Now On, Everything Will Be Different. It was I had passed. Actually, that sci-fi adventure, I turned that into a novel as well, and that one was censored by the publisher because they didn't want too many romantic scenes. They don't want to see like teenagers kissing, things like that. So, and then they didn't want to discuss on that. They're like, well, you know, it's our company policy. That's it. So yeah, and so when I'm publishing my other novel, From Now On, Everything Will Be Different, I made sure that I put it in the contract that I get to say, I had the final say on the proof before it goes to print.
Okay.
And I felt like I couldn't do that with the bigger publishers. I didn't feel like I have enough bargaining power.
Okay.
So I went to a small independent publisher. So that was published, uncensored. And then I got an Australian publisher, and mm-hmm. and the book came out in English. And then what happened was when we were going to launch it at the Ubud Writers Festival last year in Bali, there were problems there because there were many sessions about the 1965 mass murders, massive human rights violations in Indonesia. And there were sessions about that, and the local police didn't want us to talk about that tragedy. So they warned the organizers to cancel the sessions, or they would withdraw the festival's permit. So the festival organizers canceled the sessions, and my book launch was one of the canceled sessions. Mm. Although it didn't talk about 1965, but it did talk about that other period that is also still very controversial in Indonesia, the 1998 period, around the student protests as the status quo government was very threatened. There were all these riots and lootings and rape that were, I think, of course, a lot of factors go into it. There's a lot of mass hysteria and provocations, but that some part of it is also, I think, is orchestrated.
Mm.
Yeah, just to create
so
this,
maybe
to
corruption.
To create this fear, you know? so people don't go protesting on the streets again. Yeah, so
and look what will happen.
So and those tragedies are also still not officially acknowledged, and part of that is in my book as well.
Any people out there, a woman, of course, and men. And others who might be listening, and feminism and what it means to you.
Oh my God! I think it means a lot to me. Yeah, I was asked at a bookshop at a show at an event at a bookshop. So, and they said that people coming in and they're wondering, like, so what do you think are feminist books? You know, and I don't think it has to be a genre, right? I think how can a book be feminist? I think it comes from the spirit, the spirit that the author has, you know, whether he or she or they have this, do they support the view of, like, you can do anything regardless of your gender. And that spirit kind of bleeds into what they write. Seeing the women characters as, you know, fully fleshed human beings and not just conforming to the types or the stereotypes that we have around. It's very important to me, and I think I find it in across genres. Don't let anyone limit your dreams just because you're a girl or you're different. Hi, I'm Eliza Fitri Handayani. I'm a novelist from Indonesia, and I'm here on Broad on Joy 94.9.
Perfect.
Is that good?
Perfect. Okay. Bianca from The Girl Readers, what does feminism mean to you?
Feminism for me is creating equality for all humans across the world, regardless of circumstance, and not keeping anyone down for whatever reason.
Sont passées les femmes, nous qui n'avons pas d'histoire. Depuis la nuit des temps, les femmes, nous sommes le continent noir. Debout, femmes esclaves, et brisons nos entraves. Debout, 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 asservies, humiliées, les femmes achetées, vendues, violées. Dans toutes les maisons, les femmes hors du monde reléguées. Debout, femmes esclaves, et brisons nos entraves. Debout, debout, debout. Seules dans notre malheur, les femmes, l'une de l'autre ignorées. Ils nous ont divisées, les femmes, et de nos sœurs séparées. Debout, femmes esclaves, et brisons nos entraves.
ensemble on nous opprime les femmes, ensemble révoltons-nous debout, femmes esclaves, et brisons nos entraves, debout, debout, debout. Le temps de la colère, les femmes, notre temps est arrivé. Connaissons notre force, les femmes, découvrons-nous des milliers. Debout, femmes esclaves, et brisons nos entraves, debout, 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 debout.
Hello, this is yes, parlez-vous français, maintenant, hymne de la MIF, nous les femmes. Now, that phrase was coined by French feminist movement, the second wave in France in the 60s and 70s, and refers in particular to one woman component, that is the writer and activist Monique Wittig. So in 1970, they wrote that song. It's considered the Marseillaise, I guess, for women and for French feminism in La France, of course. So much we don't know about it. But basically it says, wake up, wake up. Let us break our shackles, standing as female slaves. Only in our misfortune, women, one of the other ignored. They divided us, women, and our separated sisters. Standing as female slaves, let us break our shackles. Wake up, wake up, wake up.
That's deep.
That's deep, isn't it, Jackie? Here on Broad on Joy 94.9. So, yes, bit of French feminism. And, of course, that brings us to the new film. It was actually at the Queer Film Festival this year, 2016, and it's called Summertime, but the translation is from La Belle Saison, a 2015 French-Belgian romantic drama directed by an out lesbian as well, Catherine Corsini, who sees herself as a feminist too, co-written with Laurette Polmans. It stars Cécile de France and Izia Hejlan and Naomi Levosky. Premiered at the Locarno Film Festival, International Film Festival, it won some awards there and been nominated for César's, etc. It's an amazing film. It does start off very promising as far as looking at French feminism in the 70s, and it's quite rousing because they do sing that actual feminist anthem in the one of the écoles, one of the, you know, schools, philosophy, of course. And that is where the two women meet. Yes, Izia Hegelin. And actually, I found out she's a pop singer in France.
Really?
Yeah, she's a rock pop singer. She's pretty cool. She's had some very big hits in France. Hello. And that's really cool. I was listening to some of that music the other night. Might have to play that in another show if we've got time. Yes, she plays Delphine and Cécile de France is Carol. Now, Carol's the older, wiser, more experienced woman, of course. And Delphine is the country bumpkin, pretty much. She says so herself.
A classic story.
Classic story. She goes to the city because she's had enough. She has to run the farm of her father. And the mother is left behind to run it, pretty much just the parents on their own. I believe their only child is Delphine. And she's not interested in getting married for obvious reasons. And she goes to the big city, Ile de la Cité, Paris. And in the city of dreams and love. So that's what she finds with Carol, Cécile de France. But of course, it's a rocky road to love because Cécile doesn't realize that she may not be straight after all.
I always find that romantic tropes really, really bother me and bore me in most films, except for when it's about two women. Then I'm all for it. I'm a sucker for it.
Yep. It's and great. This one was very nice. It was a very casual kind of expression of the relationship. It does have all those tropes and, you know, it does stick to that formula. But I'll tell you what, the performances from those two, the chemistry between them seemed really tangible, really real and very hairy. It's the 70s. And yes, the armpits are hairy. The muff is muff. It is there. It is the bush, la bush, and there's no denying it. And it's a very sexy film for its era that it portrays. I think it does very well. The naivety that Delphine has is balanced by Carol's worldliness and matter-of-factness. And basically, they sleep with each other. It's no spoiler, really, because it's what people did back then. It's like a lot of times genders were crossed, and a lot of times sexuality was, as you call it, experimental. But I enjoyed this. And there is a moment in the film where it's quite rousing, not just with that anthem we heard, but very rousing, because there's a moment in the film where they rescue a gay male friend from a hospital where he's being corrected. So, yes, in France they had very terrible backward conversion therapies, which were serious and often involved in a lobotomy, or, you know, not that there's anything worse than that. But he's locked up and they go and rescue him. And there's a split, you can feel the split that happens in the feminist movement, the second wave, where queer rights is not as important as feminist rights. And I think there still is a little bit of that taint in our world today and feminism today. But that's another topic altogether we may tackle at another time, Jackie.
On another show, perhaps.
On another show in another dimension. Yeah, no. The Hollywood Reporter liked this film, so that's okay. And I certainly did. And I do recommend it. I think it's okay. And without giving too much more away, you can relax. You can relax about it. Hashtag another dead lesbian. Okay, no, you can relax. It's not
none of that.
Like, none of that, none of that. So that's Summertime. It is out, I believe, September 15, coming up very soon, and at selected cinemas. I am giving this out of 10. I'm giving this an 8, a very happy 8. And let's face it, it makes me want to go to the French countryside and eat a baguette with some gorgeous feminists.
Sounds beautiful.
Look, it's light on the feminism side, but it's heavy on the romance side. I think it balances it well.
Yeah.
Cool. So there you go. La Belle Saison. That's the best I can do for French feminism right now, because very shortly we will have the third and last interview. I'm exhausted.
It's packed.
It's packed. And this was with Molly Crabapple, the activist we mentioned before. Don't forget to send us a message if you wish to, 0427-JOY949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. You're listening to Sonia and Jackie, and this is Broad on Joy.
Bombastic, audacious, revolutionary, rash, outraged, organized, assertive, activist, day.
Broad
on Joy 94.9.
I'd like to welcome you to Broad, Molly Crabapple. It's great to have you here. You're at the ACMI as part of the Melbourne Writers Festival, and it's your first time here in Melbourne, so welcome.
Thank you. I love it here.
Now, it's a big one for you. It's your launch of your book as well, your memoir, Drawing Blood. Can you tell us a bit about that? And
oh dear, it's always the worst for writers to describe their books, because we're basically twitchy, introverted weirdos. That's why we are reduced to writing in the first place. So I'm going to do my best here, but you'll forgive me. It's a memoir about becoming an artist in New York City, and that's New York from 9/11 through the depraved financial boom years to Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal when you look at the work that you have been doing involved in, and I think Occupy has been one of the biggest ones. For those who don't know, what happened there in a nutshell, and how did you get involved?
Occupy happened 5 years ago in New York City, and it was worldwide protest against financial inequality, against abuse by the police, against the corruption that money has been enacting in politics. It also happened down the street from where I live. I was very, very privileged to get to spend a lot of time both documenting Occupy and doing posters for it. And since then, I've been able to use those techniques as an artist, and also to write as a journalist about places around the world, from Gaza to the Syrian refugee crisis, to migrant workers in Abu Dhabi, to the American prison system.
Yeah, all of these things are real touchstones, I think, the last 5 to 6 years now, and you've been a key one of the artists that have been part of it and following it, but also helping to create, I think, a lot of the images that we see. Just looking through your work, huge body of work, from the drawings to the paintings to the murals, and now, you know, you're in the Museum of Modern Art as a permanent collection there. What was that like?
It's funny. You know, people think like, oh my God, you're a millionaire or whatever. Actually, the Museum of Modern Art got my piece from someone else, and I didn't even know I was in it until they emailed me and they were like, yo, what's the caption info for this? I was like, dear. Well then, it's cool. I mean, to be honest, it means a lot more to me. Like when I see my art in a protest sign or when I see my art we paste on the street, though, it certainly is a cool credential. It makes my mom proud. It makes my mom think I made good.
Your work or caricatures, would you call them that? Satire even, when you're looking at more of a political side of things. It seems to carry a tradition which is very, very original and very American. Do you feel that you're a part of that history now, living history?
Well, it's actually a worldwide tradition of artists documenting events, documenting history as it happens. I am so inspired, for instance, by Goya's Disasters of War, but also by Chitta Prasad, who's an amazing Indian artist who chronicled the Bengal famine. And his works were actually banned by the British, and his collections of his prints that he published were burned by the British because he was criticizing a man-made famine, and they said that he was hurting the war effort. I'm very inspired by Otto Dix, who is a painter, I mean, first of like Weimar Berlin, but also of like trench warfare, because he was a conscript in that army. I think that there, I mean, we're artists, right? We have our sketch pad, and we want to chronicle the world around us, and when history is happening around us, we want to chronicle that, just like we want to chronicle a night out with friends, or just like we want to chronicle our lover. And I find that tradition so rich and so global, and it's something that I very am deeply inspired by.
Where did the vampire squid, the octopus,
it comes from a writer who I love and whose book I later illustrated. It was Matt Taibbi. He's an amazing American journalist. And just like one of the sharpest voices for talking about like the bullshit New York, the bullshit American political establishment, or about political corruption, about the financial crisis. I mean, his pen is like a rapier. He is so good. And he called Goldman Sachs a vampire squid stuck to the face of humanity sucking out money. And I was like, that is a visual metaphor. And someone ought to make that explicit. And so I did.
You did, yeah. It's powerful. And there's a lot of good artists from that period. And, of course, with Black Lives Matter. How is that environment-wise? What is happening over there?
I mean,
your experience?
I have such admiration for Black Lives Matter, and I'm so excited that at Festival of Dangerous Ideas, Aliza Garza is going to be speaking there. She's one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. I mean... this is a movement that started by two queer women of color that has like shaken the political establishment of America, that has forced like presidential candidates, forced the president to address it, that has deeply challenged, you know, really many institutions of white supremacy there, and that spread around the world. I don't know if it's hit Australia, but in London there were Black Lives.
It has. In a park called Kalgoorlie, there was a young black Aboriginal boy who was killed, and the police, there's some sort of strange involvement. It was a hit and run, something's going on, and they're rioting at the moment. So, you know, real breakdown to the bare bones, and they've been putting placards up saying Black Lives Matter, so Black Lives Matter here as well. So yeah, it's had a massive impact, and I think it's just starting to kick off over here too.
That's
interesting and important.
I mean, that's amazing, that sort of international solidarity and inspiration. And yeah, I have such admiration. When Ferguson first happened, I have to admit, I was looking at it and I was like, man, it felt like Occupy was children's dress rehearsal compared to what people are doing here and what people are risking here.
You've been to Ferguson as well?
I haven't been to Ferguson,
okay.
No. I did some sort of journalist, or some projects about it. I did an animation about it. A lot of my friends either covered Ferguson or, you know, even went to Ferguson as activists, but I didn't have the chance, unfortunately. Yeah. Though I did participate in protests in New York about, you know, the killing of Eric Garner.
Yeah. And, of course, a lot of the names of a lot of these places are now, you know, going to be ingrained in that. Now we've got Baton Rouge and, I believe, St. Louis and so on and so on. The chaos after 2008, pretty much after the big recession there. So we sort of watched down here in anticipation and also in fear, I suppose, of what's going to happen with Trump and Clinton. What are your thoughts about the upcoming election?
Oh, God, there's so much to say.
Yeah.
I want to start by saying that obviously Trump is Tangerine Mussolini, and I feel like the more words I spend on condemning that horrible little man, the more I'm like, it's already been said. What am I going to say?
Yeah.
That he's like, that he's this racist fascist. I mean, yeah, obviously. I also have to say, though, that Clinton is such a profoundly weak and corrupt candidate. I think that the Democrats did a huge, huge disservice to at least half their party that voted, for Bernie, by tacking so hard to the right, by continuing to be so emphatically, pro-corporation. And I think that there's a lack of realization that the old sort of neoliberal world order is not something that many people around the world are interested in anymore. And unfortunately, I see right-wing parties more than left-wing parties benefiting from that, and right-wing extremists like Trump benefiting from that. And a party like the Democrats needs to also deal with that. It has to stop pretending that it's still before 2008, that it's still before the financial crisis, or else I really fear that even if Trump is beaten in this election cycle, the Republicans will unleash a candidate that's just as fascist but slightly less ludicrous, and then maybe that will win next time. I was so honestly surprised at how many people in America did vote for Bernie, at how many people rallied for him.
Yeah,
it was a real upset and a real challenge. And, we live in hope that that sort of thing can and will happen again, because I think it needs to. Otherwise, it's just going to be these fucking right-wing racist populists that are scooping up that disaffected vote. It's so rare that you see someone genuinely decent who actually believes what he says. and yeah, I know, you're just like, wow, you were a socialist then, you're a socialist now, you've stayed a socialist in and out of fashion. You have responded with dignity and honesty and good faith, and you are just way better, probably, than our terrible system deserves.
And
yes, that's the end of that one. Molly Crabapple. We'll have the full interview very soon. So, yes, fuck those racists and fuck Trump. Bernie Sanders, you are awesome. And we're totally with Molly Crabapple. If only in alternate reality we could have had Bernie as president, because Clinton is incredibly problematic. But that's another story, isn't it, Jackie?
Yeah, better Clinton than Trump, but...
But hey, that's what they said about Turnbull or Abbott, didn't they? And thanks again to the messages we've had tonight. Thank you so much, Matt. Great show tonight, Sonia. Excellent. Thank you very much. And we had a member as well. We had someone join from Hawthorne, Will. Will, not wool.
Thank you,
my
Will.
Accent. And we had a message from Louis. Thank you so much, Louis, for that message about Carl. And the apology, there wasn't an apology, but thank you for your opinion. We appreciate it. Up next, we've got Beck, Bite Me Down Under. Or is it Bite Down Under?
Bite Me Down Under. Let's not do the other one.
All right. So we're in the studio next week. Watch out for the podcast. There's a whole heap coming up, about a dozen or so. So stay tuned for that on joy.org.au. And, of course, Broad again with Molly Crabapple. We'll have the Elisa Vitri-Handiani, and we'll have the Rosemary Myers, and much, much more, including that forum I spoke about on Broad. Thank you. And next week, we've got a bunch of women of joy are coming broadside. So we'll have Delcy from Unicorn Youth, and we've got Susan Ruby from a lot of things, actually. She's done a lot. She does a lot of things. My mind's gone blank.
It's going to be good, though. It's exciting.
Yeah, The Informer.
Yes, yeah,
and the only bisexual show as well that she does. So that's really important. So stay listening to Broad and to Joy, and thanks. Have a good week. Have a good week. That just doesn't sound right.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, sisters. You've been listening to this Broad podcast here on Joy 94.9. Don't forget to tune into us Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Joy for feminism in your ears.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.